John, just running over my notes for NFL Only Better. How many touchdowns has your boy Baker Mayfield got?
He's thrown 3 touchdowns, Kieran.
In how many games?
In 3 games.
And Daniel Jones has 4 touchdowns in one game.
Well, he's thrown 2 touchdowns.
Well, all that and more on NFL Only Better.
My favorite lane. I always say it, the next one.
Going like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious. That ball was on the line.
Hello and welcome to NFL Only Better, your weekly Wednesday roundup. Everything that has happened in the NFL and hopefully what will happen in the weeks to come. Joining me once again is John Balfe here right beside me in studio, and on the line is Mike Carlson. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Kieran.
Don't forget, a nice thing to do on a Wednesday.
Lovely. We always love having you, Mike. Don't forget, of course, to subscribe to the channel wherever you are listening to us. You'll get Football Only Better every Thursday and Racing Only Better every Friday. And do actually get in touch with us if you'd like to get anything involved in the show, have something on that you prefer to listen to or hear us say talk about. We always like to hear that as well. And do give us a rating as well. It pushes us up the charts and gets us more. And it's a vanity thing for me as well. It's vanity, really. Look, guys, we're not afraid to look back before we look forward. What we got wrong at the weekend, very, very little.
See, that's why people listen to us, Kieran. We get very little wrong. But when we do get it wrong, sometimes we get it spectacularly wrong. So I guess that's the trade-off.
That's the trade-off.
Yeah, well, I think we're headed for a fall sooner or later. I mean, one of the things that happens, obviously, is as the season goes on, you get a better and tighter handle on the teams. But then, you know, so do the odds makers. But I do have to say that my column on Fridays on Betfair, where I try to avoid doubling up on what I've said on the podcast, did really well as well as my best bet last week, which I noticed, you know, you guys went the wrong way. But last week I said take the over on Detroit and Philadelphia, which was 47 at the time. It actually went down to 46, which made it an even better bet. I said, thanks a lot, guys.
It did. That was my request. I got involved there.
Listen, guys.
I mean, looking back, Dallas on the handicap was one of our bets. Thursday Night Football to go under was one of our bets. Kansas City, yes, -4.5 at the time was the line. That would have won half a point, but it all counts. And then the other one that was big for us was Green Bay, Mike, was the one that you were keen on, and we all agreed that it was more than likely the winner. So that was a winner as well. So really, I mean, I'm going to say right now, I had a little treble on Sunday night and I was quids in. I was a very happy man on Sunday evening, I must say.
I'll bet you were. Yeah, Green Bay was my best bet on the column on Friday as well. And in fact, the only one of those that didn't work, the Chargers were evens, giving 3.5 to Houston. So I took that as a value bet, but also said to go under. And it hit the under because it was 48.5 and it was 47 in the game. And the outside bet was Buffalo and Cincinnati was even to go under 44, which they did quite easily. And I gambled a little bit with the Patriots and Jets going over 43.5, and that turned out to 44. But of course, the big news for other people who were willing to take the spread, the Jets plus the points, those two touchdowns, one on a fumbled punt by the Patriots in the end zone and the other one on a pick six when the Patriots put the backup quarterback in for 3 plays.
Yeah, he didn't get a lot of time.
And gave up.
No.
So those two touchdowns were enough for the Jets to cover the spread. And they were celebrating in certain sections of Foxborough when they got that second touchdown.
And you know, that's a really interesting one when we talk about bad beats and things that can happen in NFL games, because the two big handicaps at the weekend were Dallas Cowboys against Miami Dolphins and the New England Patriots against the Jets. And if you join those matches an hour true, the Dallas were only up by 4. So you were like, damn,
yeah, what's happening
this
here?
Is losing.
Yeah.
And the Patriots were running away with it. And then by the time the game actually ends, Dallas have covered and the Pats have not. And that's...
Yeah, if you had joined that on the hour with Dallas up 10-6 and Miami had a first down inside the 10 and Kenyon Drake fumbled the ball and Dallas recovered.
Yeah,
and that was like driving a huge spike through the hearts of the Dolphins, and in the second half they came out completely flat, and Dallas just rolled.
Roll them over. Who had the worst week, Mike? People who backed the unders in the Jags-Jets game, which had a very high-scoring fourth quarter, or the line moved for Kansas to 5.5. That's pretty tough to take.
Yeah, if you get in, it's one of those things for getting in early. You know, some it's 50-50 because you never quite know which way the line's going to move as the money comes in. But that was tough. And the Tennessee-Jacksonville game, you know, when you think that that's another one where turnovers were a big thing, and it was one crucial turnover, the fumbled punt by Adoree Jackson that really opened that game up. And this was the theme in a number of games where you had a lot of turnovers, or in the case of Atlanta, 16 penalties for 130 or 128 yards. That just changes. That's the one thing you just can't count on. And that changes the complexion of the game right away, not least because a couple of key turnovers for points, as we saw in New Orleans and Seattle. New Orleans picked up 14 points on a punt return touchdown and a fumble return touchdown. That changes Seattle's game. And Seattle can't play the kind of game they want to play. And so that affects you not only on the spread, but on the over-under and on the straight up as well.
Yeah, I must say, I mean, I spoke about the treble, but after that, of course, I went back in, and I backed Seattle in play. They were 3-1 at one stage, and I looked at the stats. It's how the stats will get you sometimes. I don't think Pete Carroll had ever lost an NFL game at home in September. I was like, he's not going to start.
Yeah, he's 15-0, I believe.
Not starting today, you know, so I was like 3-1 in play. I'm playing with the house's money. It did not work out well.
Well, it's a brave man betting for the Saints to lose these days. I mean, they just seem to score points at will a lot of the time.
They did a really nice job of
adjusting their offense to Teddy Bridgewater. But again, you know, absent Deontay Harris and absent the fumble, they lose that game, you know, and everybody's happy who's bet it.
So let's just slightly move on to some of the headlines that came out of the NFL over the week, and we'll try and, you know, mold how we see the games going this week. Mike, you were clear on what you thought about the Giants. Are the Giants good now?
The Giants are better now. I think Jones gives them a lot of options that they didn't have under Eli, and probably executes what Pat Shurmur would like to run on offense better than Eli did. They still need an over-the-top receiver, a sort of Odell Beckham type, and I don't know where the Giants would come up with someone like that.
But, they have that sort of talent out there on the side.
If only they had it.
And you know, so Jones will probably have a tough time. He was sacked 5 times in that game and survived that sack, because they all came in a bunch, and he survived that pretty well. But remember, too, Tampa should have won that game. It was basically an extra point that Matt Gay missed as a field goal, and they'd made the kick 7 yards longer for him by taking a penalty and then taking a knee to give him to put the ball on the hash mark, but 2 yards further back. But still, it was an exceptionally makeable kick. It didn't seem to occur to Bruce Arians that Gay had already missed 2 extra points, so that putting the kick at the extra point spot was maybe not a good idea. But but Tampa should have won that game.
Do you think there's an extra a lot of pressure now on? Well, obviously there's pressure on Jones. Daniel Jones is a starting quarterback in the league, particularly after seemingly a lot of the fan base weren't overly enamored with him getting picked 6 in the draft last year. But is it interesting to you, Mike, that the rise of Daniel Jones comes at the exact same week where they lose Barkley for looks like maybe 9 or 10 weeks?
It's a horrible coincidence. It's a coach's nightmare. They don't have a replacement for Barkley. You know, Gallman's not a playmaker the way he was. And I'm thinking of him, you know, not just as a runner, but as a receiver, because it does give them an extra level of receiving that, you know, with Ingram and both Shepherds, but Sterling Shepherd mainly, they're not a deep, as I said, they're not a deep throwing team. So they have to be able to beat you on shorter. And that's going to make life for them a whole lot harder, because nobody's really going to take them seriously as a running team. Their offensive line's not good enough, I think, to turn Gallman into a running threat. And for any rookie quarterback, you know, that's a problem. Lack of experience is a problem. And the other problem is that the league will watch and see what he can and can't do and then adjust to that. But now, making him, like, as you have to, the focus of your offense is going to be a difficult thing for the Giants.
Just on Tampa Bay, John, mm-hmm. If you draft a kicker high,
fifth round, I think.
You draft him high and you feel that he has to be put on a hash mark to take what is a kick that, and I'm being nice, most kickers, I'm being nice there by saying most kickers in the NFL would pop that over for the win.
He was four from five in that game, and I think he'd hit some kicks from 49 yards, maybe into the 50s. And they put him in the middle of the hash marks because they had the option to. They were playing for that. It wasn't out of necessity.
Should he need to be? This isn't college.
He made a 27-yard field goal earlier in the game, which would have been the distance before Arian started playing with it. I think it was a classic case of overcoaching.
Yes, I agree with that.
They just needed to take the kick and not worry about making it special for him. And remember, this is the team. It wasn't Bruce Arians. It was the same general manager who drafted Roberto Aguayo in the second round a couple of years ago, and Aguayo didn't last out half the season there.
Guys, the AFC Championship, Mike, when we did the season preview, you were pretty clear cut that you felt the Chiefs and the Patriots were quite a bit ahead of everyone else. I don't think we've seen anything over the course of the 3 weeks that says to me that they're not. Should we just start thinking about the AFC Championship game right now?
I'll tell you, Baltimore in defeat were pretty impressive. And, you know, I wouldn't rule them out. I think they didn't want to play a shootout game with the Chiefs, and they were able to hold them a bit in check. But they wound up with almost, I think it was a 950-yard game, and they had almost half of those yards, which was a pretty good sign. And Lamar Jackson was not particularly efficient passing either, but they were able to run the ball. And I think against a lot of teams, including the Patriots, they might be able to create a difficult situation for them because they can stop the run and because their secondary is pretty good and can man cover, especially when Jimmy Smith comes back. So I'm not writing Baltimore out of that AFC equation just yet. I think they're clearly the class of that division now, especially with the Steelers, with Mason Rudolph. And, you know, I also thought that Harbaugh was just excellent when he explained why he went for a 2-point conversion down by 11.
Yes.
The reason was, although, you know, logic would sort of say you don't need it, you need 10.
We're out here trying to win football games.
To tie.
Yeah,
but he was out to win, not just to win the game, but the important thing was how they were going to win it. They did not want to go to overtime. They wanted to play the Chiefs even in regulation, because overtime is a crapshoot in a way. Yeah. You lose the toss against a team like the Chiefs and you can lose the game, just like the Chiefs did against the Patriots in the playoffs last year. So I think he wanted to try to keep his team in a position where they could win the game with a touchdown and a field goal rather than tie it. And of course, he still had that option again if they had scored a second touchdown to go for two again. So, you know, we often criticize coaches for those kind of decisions, but most of the time those criticisms wind up being based on the outcome rather than the decision itself. And the way he explained it, I had a lot of respect for the thought process behind that.
Yeah, no, myself and John, we were speaking about it just before we came on. Yeah. I thought it was really good. You know, there's a feeling within some NFL analysts these days that you really should go for two every time, you know, because...
If you do that at a 50% shot, you're still getting what the PAT would be anyway. So.
Absolutely. Final couple of notes from me, Mike. Sorry.
Yeah, I think the impressive thing with Harbaugh was that he's taken that into account and he's taken what you might call situational football into account. You know, which is why teams don't go for two all the time. But, you know, I really liked his logic in that.
Last one, I suppose we've already touched on the Saints continuing to play well, but how impressed were both of you guys over the weekend with the 49ers defense, which basically kept them in the game and in the end won it for them.
Yeah, they seem like they're onto something this year, aren't they? They're 3-0 now for the first time in, I think, over 20 years going into a season.
And they did their best to lose that game, if you ask me. I just, what was it, 4 fumbles in the first half?
I mean, I personally don't really think this is going to extend very much deeper into the season, this undefeated streak. But sure, listen, we'll see what happens.
It's going to get exciting.
You know, Jimmy G threw an interception. It should have been a fifth fumble, really, because it was in Wilson's hands, and he lost it as he turned around. Richie James fumbled, but he had a couple of decent kick returns to balance it out. I think the thing here now is Akello Witherspoon is injured and apparently out for 6 weeks or more. So that right now, the Jalen Ramsey market is going towards San Francisco. And Jalen Ramsey and Richard Sherman as a pair of cornerbacks is a pretty frightening idea for most teams passing. And I think that they'll certainly be investigating it. I don't think they're going to want to buy at peak. But when Jason Verrett came in and they picked him up from the Chargers, and Verrett is a good corner who has terrible knees and has missed most of his career because of knee injuries. He looked like a guy with 80-year-old knees in that game. He could not turn. He could not chase. Pittsburgh was going after him with some success. So I think the kind of motivation to go for a Jalen Ramsey is going to be there, and certainly it would make a good defense even better.
Well, let's talk about the 6 o'clock game, which is 2-3-0 teams. It is the New England Patriots heading to the Buffalo Bills. Mike, actually, in your column on betting.betfair, which comes up every Friday, I think your outside bet, I'm not sure if it's outside or your value bet, was unders in the Cincinnati Buffalo Bills game, which also clicked, of course, over the weekend. So New England -7, Bills +7, point spread is 41.5. The Patriots going to roll in and just beat the Bills, John?
Well, no, it is an interesting clash of the 2-3-0 teams, as you're talking about. I think on form so far this season, I think the Patriots 3-0 looks a bit better than the Bills 3-0 does at the moment. Certainly defensively, they've been magnificent defensively. I don't think they've conceded a touchdown yet this
They have at the weekend.
Just gone. Just no, go but into
their defense didn't. Yeah. Both of those were were non-defensive, plays.
There you go. Exactly.
So John's absolutely right.
All right, everyone. All right. Where's the cut button?
Yeah. But just to the Bill. I mean, I kind of like what I don't know. I think I like Josh Allen as a quarterback. I just like the guy. So I'm interested to see him up against Brady. I mean, there's probably a skill deficit there to talk about, and that should play into the betting lines going into the game. But I think it's an interesting test to see where both of these teams are now, but I'd fully expect New England to come out there on top. And to be honest, I'd expect them to come out on top quite handsomely.
Mike?
You know, it's a fascinating situation because the Bills' defense is for real. They were last year, and they haven't shown any signs of slowing up, which is why I went with that under against Cincinnati. They're strong on each level. It's like Carolina's. I was thinking back to when the Patriots played Carolina, the game where Rob Gronkowski didn't get the call in the end zone for being held by Luke Kuechly, the linebacker. It's a 7-point spread, and a 41.5 over under. The Patriots offensively are going to be a team that someone figures out. And I think the way that they will figure it out is to completely shut off the run game, make them be a completely passing team, and use pass rush, strangely enough, to try to attack Brady. Yeah. And that could have some success. The problem for Buffalo is, as much as you like Josh Allen and as much as he seems to have advanced as a passer this year, the big problem with Allen is his running ability. And if you can keep him in the pocket and make him beat you in the pocket, that's the way you're going to win those games. He's got a little bit of downfield receiving now in downtown John Brown. And they're using their other options pretty well. So I think this will be a real test for New England's defense as much as for Baltimore, as for Buffalo's offense. The Bills are creeping toward 3-1 on the money line as winners. And I don't know, that as an outside bet, that seems to me better than taking them with seven. Because it's going to be one of those things. If they win the game, it'll probably be a fairly low scoring game.
True. But I was just going to ask you about the Patriots. We'll be going into this. Do you think they'll be able to overcome the loss of Patriots legend Antonio Brown? I believe he had a 100% success ratio for touchdowns per game. So this is going to be.
That's a very good question, because what Brown gave them was the guy who becomes hard to account for, especially if, you know, they don't have a Rob Gronkowski, obviously. They don't have Devlin, their fullback, this week. They played without James White last week, but that was personal. He's going to be back. Brown was the guy who you could put in motion inside and try to get a linebacker covering him. Yeah. Or if you didn't, you might get a linebacker covering Edelman, say. So he was like the guy who could create mismatches for them. And they don't have that now. And that's going to be an ongoing problem for them as they look for another way to try to create those mismatches. And when you're dealing with the Bills and they've got a good secondary with, especially Tre'Davious White, who had a couple of interceptions last week, but is a kind of overlooked, really good player. This, to me, is a game of the week, and it's going to really tell us a lot about that season. I picked the Bills as a wild card choice this year, thinking that they get four automatic wins in that division. The Patriots tend to expect six automatic wins. I think this would, if they're going to lose a game in the division, this is going to be the game they could lose.
Yeah, well, Edelman's day-to-day, Flash Gordon appears to be back and trending in the right direction.
Yeah.
They've lost Antonio Brown, as we've said. They're not an absolute lock for me.
Would you ever, three games into a season, say the Patriots are absolutely certainly going to win the Super Bowl? You'd say, like, no, oh, there's a few other teams out there that could have a chance to do it. And then every year, well, not every year, but they seem to get there or thereabouts anyway, regardless of form.
Yeah, the other place where this is a real test is in the offensive line for New England. Their left tackle is Marshall Newhouse, who they basically signed off the street 2 weeks ago. If it's not, then it'll be Corey Cunningham, who the Cardinals let go with one of the worst offensive lines in the league. Their center is Ted Karras, who's been a backup his whole career. I don't think any team in the league would be trading for him as a center. So against a really tough defensive front like Buffalo have, it's going to be a real challenge.
Okay, so Bills outside bet and possibly the way to go on a handicap, but John, we're disagreeing. You're going to stick with the Patriots and you fancy them to win pretty well.
Oh, I've just been burned too many times trying to pick the opposite, so it's learned behavior at this stage.
The 9:25 game, guys, that Sky are going to be shown is Minnesota at Chicago. I'm going to say it. People are going to listen. People can respond if they want, but Chicago are not good. I don't care what I saw on Monday. They're not a good side. That's it. They're not. They have a bad quarterback.
Yeah.
They don't really have, they've got one okay running back and one
Montgomery,
okay wide receiver.
Yeah.
And after that, they're not a good team. Mike, take it from there. You can take it from there, Mike.
Well, the over-under on this is 38, and if it were 28, I might still be betting the under. the thing with the Vikings is they have a couple of guys who are big play receivers, and they have a really good running back in Dalvin Cook. So, like Chicago, they would like to play. Well, actually, no. Chicago would like to play a more wide open game, but as you said, Trubisky's not the quarterback for it. The Vikings are in a position where they can play what they want to do, which is basically run Dalvin Cook and have Kirk Cousins hit Thielen or Diggs twice a game with longer passes and beat you with defense. What you've got, the Bears are not a bad team because they have a really good defense, and if Akeem Hicks and Bilal Nichols both come back healthy. They were both hurt during that game. And I think the prospectus on Hicks, at least, is that he's back. They're strong at all three levels, and they're aggressive. They're going to put pressure on Trubisky. That's going to be one of the key moments of the game would be turnovers. At home, the Bears have already lost to Green Bay. And in the opening week, Green Bay played really well defensively against them. Green Bay has a better quarterback, but right now they don't have a high functioning offense. The Bears, I don't know. The Bears are are giving 2.5 points. I think the Vikings with 2.5 is a pretty good bet in this game. I'd like it a little bit better with 3, but I always would. But the under is the really tempting one at 38. And in fact, I think 10 to 11 is not very generous at 38 points in this league. But there you go.
Right. Well, again, I don't think we can affect that. It's an interesting one, that NFC North with the Green Bay Packers 3-0, but Detroit Lions 2-0, Minnesota Vikings 2-1, Chicago Bears 2-1. So that's going to be one that's interesting to look at throughout the course of the season. So this is actually quite a big game, really, for them. I mean, if Packers and the Lions were both to win, they would be moving away. You touched on Green Bay. Do you think that Aaron Rodgers is a happy man these days? We're getting away from it, but you know, this is how we talk. And when Mike brings up something,
yeah,
I look at how he's playing, and even though they're 3-0, I wouldn't be. He looks like a man that could do it a happy meal. You know, Mike, do you think he's a happy man these days at Green Bay?
I think he may feel a little bit constrained by the kind of offense that they're trying to run, because basically he had more or less a free hand in Green Bay, which actually was part of their problem. And he would, you know, hold the ball and wait for receivers to break open on one-on-one kind of patterns. And now he's throwing more toward designed plays. But I think the problem is his receivers aren't helping him really. They're getting an awful lot of drops.
Yeah, absolutely.
In this game, he doesn't really have a go-to guy. Devontae Adams is obviously theoretically his go-to guy, but they haven't been doing really well for him, and they don't really have a running game. They faced a good defense at least against Denver, and Denver held them in check for quite a while, but they really weren't in much danger in that game, I don't think. And their defense played really well. And what you've got, I think, are three teams for sure with really good defenses and questionable quarterbacking. And it, you know, it's kind of presumptuous of me to say questionable when you got Aaron Rodgers involved, but it's more a question of questionable offense. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the Lions, whose defense seems to be coming into really good form as well. And Matt Stafford's always been a kind of blow hot, blow cold quarterback. You know, who I think they're looking at to get him into some sort of programmed rhythm rather than freelancing. The result was a good win for them in Philadelphia. Although, again, special teams was the key to that, because they had that 100-yard kickoff return that changed the whole complexion of the game. And once again, Carson Wentz got hurt by drops. It was Goddard this time who dropped on the end zone. But did you see the story out of Philadelphia? This guy walking past a house that was on fire.
It's brilliant.
He went up the stairs. He couldn't do anything because of the smoke. He went outside, and someone in the house was I think it was an apartment building, was throwing babies out the window. So he was down there catching them, and the guy said, "And you caught the babies?" He said, "Yeah, not like Aguilar." I said, "You know, Philadelphia fans are so hard. I mean, that was just a Hall of Fame burn, basically."
We have managed to segue, obviously, into Thursday Night Football. Philadelphia Eagles at Green Bay Packers. 3.5 is spread at the moment, 46 to the line. Philadelphia were decent at that. That guy, Aguilar. It was a tough game in the end for Philadelphia, but I thought they played well. Green Bay are kind of constrained. It's a good game for Thursday Night Football, if I'm being honest. Sometimes we kind of don't talk about Thursday Night Football, but it does look a good one. If I was nailing my colours to the mast, I think Green Bay are a solid bet.
They don't
lose at home. I think you've mentioned before, Mike, at home they're pretty strong, you feel.
Yeah, absolutely. And then their defense is playing pretty well. And the Eagles have some offensive things to work out. Even with that, I'm kind of the over under on this one's 46 as well. And if you think about the Lions and Eagles beating 46, I think the Packers and Eagles could do the same.
Okay. Very quickly, Monday Night Football is a long way away as we sit here on a Wednesday as we record. But Bengals at Steelers. From what I saw of the weekend of the Steelers, I don't think they're going to have a great season with their new quarterback. I don't think he's going to quite be able to get the passing game going. Maybe you disagree, I'm not sure.
No, I agree with you. I'm not sure if it's all Mason Rudolph's fault, because again, this is kind of like the Green Bay situation. Juju doesn't look like a number one receiver so far, more like a number two, and they don't have a number two. So Rudolph's options are a little bit limited. Connor hasn't been as effective as he was last year, and certainly not as effective as Le'Veon Bell was the year before. And they kind of need that threat of a back coming out of the backfield. So the counter argument to that is that apart from Andy Dalton still functioning at Andy Dalton level for the Bengals, they haven't shown a whole lot else this season. They aren't able to get Joe Mixon going in the run game. Their receivers have been inconsistent at best. Buffalo gave them all kinds of problems. The Steelers, I think the defense with Minka Fitzpatrick back there can be pretty good. And playing at home, I just don't see the Bengals being able to pull this one off.
Okay. Just got to move on very quickly. Of course, we always try and do a same game multi. It fell a little bit last week. Unfortunately, there was some slight errors. John's big. But we'll look at Thursday's match, which is, of course, as we mentioned, Philadelphia at Green Bay. We've already said that we fancy Green Bay probably on the handicap. We've already said that we also fancy the under. We fancy the over. We'll get it right, Kieran.
Yeah.
Someone for a first touchdown, John?
Aaron Jones. I think he's a talented running back, and I think there's a good chance of that given what we just discussed about the kind of the slight change in the Green Bay offense. They seem to be trying to use a bit more of their weapons than being over-reliant on just, as Mike was saying, then throwing to Devontae Adams for every second play, and it doesn't seem like Adams is really handling that workload particularly well. So I like them to get up the field and give Aaron Jones the ball on the 10-yard line, and he'll run it in.
He love that. He will. Yeah. That's it. So over... Green Bay on the handicap, over on the total points, and Aaron Jones is our first touchdown score. So
I'd take
fingers
that.
Crossed. And once again, you can get involved in a same game multi. It's literally adding up markets on the same game. So you can get involved in touchdown markets, first quarter, second quarter, first half total points, away total points, home total points. Whole host of markets there, and really the best day is sort of Saturday, Sunday to have a look at it as well, once absolutely everything's priced up, because obviously as the game gets closer, more markets will appear. So it is one of those ones to really look at as the game draws closer.
Hey, Kieran?
Yeah, mate?
Just a thought, as an average punter sitting out there, if you took Nelson Aguilar for the first touchdown, would you increase the odds by about a function of 10?
Yes, you have. And he'll feel now that he needs to bounce back.
Exactly,
from
because he'll be reading those stories as well.
Well, there's no doubt that will have been shown to him.
Well, I mean, I questioned the concept of a wide receiver all of a sudden deciding to catch balls because he's being... being slated in the press for not doing it.
That's true. Yeah. Well, maybe they give him to the team's psychological coach. And he says, think of the ball as a baby being thrown out of a high apartment building, and you have to catch it to keep the baby alive. And maybe that's all the concentration he needs.
Perhaps.
That seems like he shouldn't have to go. Best bets of the week, guys. I'm going to start. Oh, boy, John, you're not going to like this.
Oh, hit me, Kieran.
I think Cleveland have been overhyped. Sorry. I think there's still not the full... I think overhyped with the Browns, and I think the Ravens are the real deal, as you actually touched on, funnily enough, Mike, as well. I think Cleveland at Baltimore, I think that's going to be a tough game. It's obviously a big game for both sides as well.
It's a division game, particularly division game. As we had just discussed with the Bengals playing the Steelers, those are 2-0-3 teams. So the loser of that is going 0-4 and the season's over. So the winner, this is a very, very important game for the top two teams in the division as it stands.
Baltimore getting 7 points. I think they'll cover it. I do.
Listen, it's a matter of time before this Browns team this season will put on a show, put on a big game where everything just kind of comes together. There's been some dodgy situations with the play calling, particularly in last week's game with Kitchens, who's still, let's face it, he's still a rookie head coach. That was his third game of his career that he's called from the sidelines as a head coach. The Ravens are looking impressive. It seems to be coming together for them. But I think that one can go either way. And just given my personal loyalties, yeah. I'll be putting money on the Browns just because it makes it fun.
Just touch on the Browns, Mike. You actually, that last play, he's faced a lot of criticism. They had timeouts. They had lots of time on the clock. They needed a touchdown to send it into overtime. Four plays, didn't get it done. Does that worry you?
A little bit, and it's part of, I think, a larger thing where they don't seem to be as inventive as they were last year when Kitchens took over. Now, part of that is that the league studied very carefully what they tried to do, and he hasn't changed up things, I think, enough from last year. Part of it, too, is they don't seem to be able to integrate Odell Beckham into that offense yet. I mean, he did have two big plays against the Giants, but they really wanted to set him free for a couple of big plays each game. And that means scheming fairly carefully to do that. The real problem, though, with the Browns is that their offensive line is not very good, especially at the tackles. Interior, it's not actually bad. So in that situation, you just have to account for that and know you're going to be under pressure. And so you've either got to pound or you've got to get rid of the ball really quickly. And they didn't do either.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with Baltimore Ravens. I think they will beat Cleveland. I think they'll cover. And I'm looking to go double up on a good week last week. So hopefully, once again, I'll prove just how smart I am and why they gave me the whole presenter host thing. Cause, you know,
I'm not nodding at you right now.
No, yeah, it's a good thing we don't film this one, I have to say. You were looking at me with a death stare for most of that. John, who do you fancy this week and why?
I think that I'm very focused on the Pats and the Bills game. I just the concept of 2-3-0 teams is always an interesting one at this part of the season. And I think I wrote it down for you there, Kieran. What did I say? I think what's the point spread there?
41.5.
I think we're hitting under that.
Under. It seems fair enough. Yeah, absolutely. Mike, your article, as always, comes out on betting.betfair on a Friday afternoon. It has three bets on it. We are like 3 weeks into the season. Have you had maybe one or two not be right, but certainly
one, all three two wrong, but each time I've suggested taking the under, I think, both times to cover yourself, and both times that's paid off.
Yes, it's a very profitable article, is what I was saying. It's a cracking read.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know he's on the phone, but I mean, we'll slate it when he hangs up.
Mike, I would expect nothing less.
Can you give us a little tidbit or someone that you're looking at right now?
Yeah, the one that kind of fascinates me is the Bucks at the Rams, which is a 10-point spread. And I'm always a cautious guy once the spreads go up into double figures. But I'm looking at some of the, you know, the Bucks can play some defense. They can hit big plays against you. But I'm looking at the Rams being able to keep that in touch and maybe cover that 10-point spread. The over-under on that's 49.5. And that's just about the level I would have expected it to, where an over bet is not unreasonable either. But you know, if you're a big Bucks fan, they're better than 3-1 to win it outright. But I just can't see that happening. And with 10 points, they might be a shot. But I really see the Rams at home as being able to take this one.
Yeah, actually 10-3 now. But Tampa, I'm a big Tampa. I like Jameis Winston. I think he gets a lot of. I think he gets a lot of bad press. I think he's good.
I like him when he throws to his teammates. That's nice.
That's occasionally his problem. So that's our best bets. And hopefully, guys, another... Thank you, John, for your input. Like,
I kind of disagree with your point, Kieran, if you hadn't noticed.
I think you're just angry right now. And I think you're taking it out a little bit.
I can't believe you dissed the Browns.
And that is it, guys. Hopefully, we'll be as successful as last week and we'll be able to come back and bask in the glory of our selections once again, which is what we're trying to do here, of course. Don't forget, subscribe to the channel. You will get us in your ear every Wednesday on NFL. You'll get into your ear Thursday football. And Friday for the racing, and there is more to come. And do, of course, subscribe to the channel and send us on any input that you have, especially all the Browns fans out there.
all of them, all of the tens and tens of Browns fans.
So that is it for us. My thank you to John here in the studio for me, and Mike, thank you again for taking the time to speak to us. We'll speak to you again soon.
Have a happy betting weekend.
Have a happy betting weekend.
Thanks, guys.